Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is one of my favorite episodes. It is the Trusted Advisor Show, Stone.
Yeah, I like this one, and it features our good friend and colleague, Soyini Koch. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Glad to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you back, and you have two esteemed colleagues, and I would think trusted advisors with you. We're going to get a chance to visit with Sandy Smith. He's a partner with Womble, Carlisle, Sandridge, and Rice. And we also have with us Ms. Sherwin Nelson-Clemens. She's a senior wealth advisor with GV Financial. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, Soyini, what compelled you to invite these two good folks to the show today?
For Sherwin, if you took a look at last week's Atlanta Business Chronicle, you saw that her firm, GV Financial, was listed as number 24 out of 25 of the largest financial advisory firms in Atlanta. GV Financial isn't a large national brand. It's a homegrown brand here from Atlanta. And I've really admired how they've built their practice. And I know that the folks that have worked with GV over the years do really see them as trusted advisors. And in a market that is filled with financial advisors, they've really found some incredible ways to differentiate themselves. So I was eager to have somebody from GV here on the show with us this morning. And Sandy is somebody that I've known for a long time. He saw me when I had just started my business, and we were involved in an alumni networking group together. And I've admired his practice for a very long time. First when he was at Morris Manning & Martin, and then as he moved his practice to Womble, I've seen the way that he is not only a very astute and brilliant lawyer, but he's also a very astute businessman and, dare I say, rainmaker. And that's the way that I think that the folks who know him think of him. And so I was very interested to hear a little bit about what he has to say about being a trusted advisor as well.
Now, Soyini, what in your business, what are the qualifications of a person being a trusted advisor? Like, what kind of qualities do they have to have? Is that something you start out aspiring to be, or how does that work?
Even if people, service providers, don't think of themselves or use the word trusted advisor, I believe all of us aspire to be in our client's inner circle. Mm-hmm. To be one of those people that your client not only looks to for whatever subject matter expertise or whatever service they've hired you to do, but thinks of you in that broader sense as a resource, even to some extent in personal matters, things that start to cut a little bit closer to the bone. And they'll really begin to look at you as somebody who can help them in growing their business, but then also in achieving whatever their personal goals is as well. And that's when I think the relationship becomes much more rich and more rewarding. So I think all of us aspire to that, and I think that line of going beyond just being a service provider to the client seeing you as a resource is really where you go from, go into being a trusted advisor.
We recently interviewed somebody in banking, and they were talking about how some of these larger firms, they don't have that. Like, they say that, oh, we want to be your trusted advisor, but in reality, that's just kind of lip service. The large bank just says that. But in reality, there's no banker that has your back that's doing all this stuff. Like, how do you move from, it being a commodity that people in your industry aspire to be to actually executing in real life?
I think that you have to begin to treat clients as though they aren't a commodity if you want to be seen that way. And so taking a personal interest, really following that client's case all the way from whatever it is that they hired you to do, but also taking it to that next level to making sure that it actually produces the result that they intend to produce, which is a subtle but very, very important difference.
So you really have to get to know them. Like, you have to put the time in and the effort in to really get to know them and their needs and what their outcomes they desire.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I think,
not just execute whatever it is they hired you for.
And more than that, I think you also have to be willing to push back and to really allow clients to see that you are an advocate for them mm-hmm. versus having your own personal agenda. And so sometimes that involves taking some risks. Sometimes that involves challenging clients, even when they don't want to be challenged. But then as they step back and they see that you're willing to take some risks, that actually creates more credibility mm-hmm. because they know that there's a lot of authenticity there.
Cool. So let's talk to your people here.
Absolutely.
Who do you want to start with?
I would love to start with Sherwin. Okay. And Sherwin, I would love to know from your perspective, how has GV Financial differentiated itself? And then also for your personal brand, and NSC, I think in last year, there was a report that said that there were over 250,000 financial advisors in the country.
Yeah.
How do you begin to differentiate yourself in a sea of you know, competition where in many cases financial advisors are seen as being a dime a dozen?
Yeah, it is definitely an area of concern for anyone who's in the industry when you use such a broad terminology like financial advisor, because it could be that you are an insurance professional, it could be that you are a stockbroker, it could be that you are on the just investment only side of the business, and you get to use the term financial advisor. So not only is it a little frustrating within the industry, but it's also very confusing for clients and for just the general public when you say, I need to get financial advice. Do I go to the bank, and will they have my best interest at heart because they've done such a good job with my checking account? Do I go to my insurance professional? Do I go to my broker? And so we have, over the years, taken the time to first educate people who come through the door, our prospects and our clients, about who we are and what we think is important for them to consider. And the way we have that conversation is very different than a lot of financial firms that are out there.
Would you give us an example?
Yeah. So first of all, even in this idea of being a trusted advisor, when you come through the door, you have to position yourself to answer the question in a different way and to get to work, not have your own agenda of what you're trying to achieve for them, but really seek to understand the client and answer the question in a way they hadn't expected. So an example would be recently I had a client who wanted to know whether or not they could afford to retire. Now, this was a silly question for most of us because this particular person, they
was 20.
Actually, 64 years old,
okay.
No debt, and had about $4.5 million. And can I afford to retire? And the question in my mind is always yes, but what are you trying to afford to do? What's most important to you? So we really focus them on what are your life priorities? How do you differentiate the important from the very important when you're thinking about making decisions? And the biggest thing is realizing that there is a distinction in how we make decisions, and we focus a lot on the emotional aspect. Your emotional brain is much more developed than your rational brain, and although very smart, intelligent people want to believe that, hey, I'm figuring this out and I can run the analytics, which all of us can do. But what is your emotional self saying? That's really what's coming to the forefront in making that decision. We've had that brain for thousands and mm-hmm. thousands of years. And it is important to recognize the impact of your emotional self on making decisions about how you use your money. And all of your wealth, we have them, our clients think about all of your wealth. You have your financial wealth, your talents, your wisdom, your network, your mind and your body. All of that's involved when you're thinking about making decisions. And so we get in there and we just get to work. And oftentimes they're looking for a financial answer when it really turns out to be much more of a, how do I access my own wisdom to make a decision that's best for me and my family? that's consistent with my priorities. And at the end of the day, it may mean that you have less money because you took a proactive step to do something that was really important versus what society says is important.
But in order to have those conversations, you can't have that. That can't be your first conversation with this person.
You know,
right? There has to be a level of trust built up over time in order to have that level of a conversation, right?
You know, it's surprising. I think when people are seeking out help and they see that you really care and you're asking questions to help them get to the root of what's going on, they are much more open to sharing that information with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, emotion sells, right? And people can tell when you're giving them a game or a story that's not real. But when you truly sit down and get to work, talk about getting naked, they sense that. And they say, hey, this person is really here to help. And they start to open up at a level so that you can get to the main point.
Because I would think in your industry, you have people have a lot of hangups about money and finances, and it's not something that a lot of people are comfortable talking about. And then on top of that, you have, you know, there's TV commercials saying that even a baby can manage the wealth and finances, you know. So that those are like kind of conflicting things when a lot of people struggle with it and they're being told that, you know, anybody can do this. And you're coming in as this advisor that's kind of going to help shape the next 30, 40, 50 years of their life.
Yeah,
so
I love those commercials. They're hilarious. And on some level, they're true, right? Because all of the information is out there.
Right, you're giving them a holistic, your clients a holistic view of wealth and money. It's not just a statement on a sheet of paper.
Right, because they can do that themselves.
Right.
Right? I mean, so with the technology, with the information, with the internet, there's the proliferation of information that's there that anyone can access. And it can be in a complicated way or a very simple way. And so when you are a trusted advisor versus an expert, what you're saying is that I know that you are smart enough to get this information, but what you need is for someone to ask you the questions in a way to help you access your wisdom so you can filter your decisions to help you make a good decision for yourself.
Right, to get an outcome you desire.
To get an outcome you desire, and in many ways, it's an outcome that you hadn't imagined.
Right.
Right, because if you go to an expert to say, I need my taxes done, and they go and they do your taxes.
Right.
You go to a trainer, I don't know how to train for this event. So you go to that expert and they help you. You go to a trusted advisor to help you uncover what you don't know that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so through the series of questions and discovery, part of my job is not to necessarily give you the answer, but is to help you figure out what we haven't even considered before as a possibility. And then I think a part of the trust is the vulnerability when they say, what should I do in terms of my withholdings? And I say, I don't know. I need to call someone else. So we need to get you in front of the right person.
Right.
I need to get you in front of the attorney, and then being able to work as a team. I don't know. We can find out. We can figure it out. I think it's probably one of the best things you can say as a trusted advisor. So oftentimes my clients will come to me and they'll say, what should I do? And I'll say, I don't know. Let's figure it out together.
Right. So it's not so much you having all the answers. You just have to kind of know where the answers are, and you have to ask the right questions.
Yeah. You have to be curious,
mm-hmm.
right? Because again, you can get the data points very easily online, but you know, people want to know that you care, and they want to know that you're helping them think about this in a way that helps to propel their what's best for them and their family, and not necessarily just you trying to, you know, pitch a product or have your own agenda. And they don't care what you know. And we've all heard this before, until they know how much you care.
Right.
And so we get down to at GV to the core of the issue, which is you are making this decision from an emotional brain center. And until you can make that connection and get rid of your and understand your money messages that you got as a child and rewrite them in a way that's convenient for you, until you understand the anxiety of wealth, until you understand what the your life priorities are, and that the three keys to a great life is about relationships, making a difference, and having highly engaged flow experiences, then you are making your decisions in a very, very narrow vacuum. And so those are the things that we try to help our clients focus on. And yeah, it's tough work.
Thank you so much, Sherwin. And Sandy, I would love to hear your answer to that question as well, in a sea of lawyers.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about your practice.
Well, Carlisle is 100 lawyers in 14 offices across the country. But there are a lot of law firms like that. And our goal is not to be your provider of legal services, because then we're the lowest common denominator. There's no relationship. You're just ordering up copy, filler, or whatever. Instead, we want to give you trusted advice. We want to be the person who's independent, who can tell you what steps you need to take to reach your goals. Most of our clients are corporations, so it's a little different analysis, but it comes down to the same. You've got to have knowledge of industry, knowledge of the company, but then knowledge of the person, and what are the goals of that person to fulfill his or her job in that company to reach those goals.
And who is it that you typically serve inside the corporations, and how do you break through? How do you, because from what I can tell of your practice, you really have gotten to that point where you're seen as not just an expert, but really somebody who's an advocate for your clients. And how have you accomplished that?
Well, one, 30 years. I mean, you don't do it overnight. Two, it is really, caring and being interested in a business and in the economy, and then going down to being interested in, the particular products that this company sells, and then how to reach those companies' goals. Often we're working with growth companies, so it's a series of financings, followed by product rollouts, followed by market entry, followed by sale. So in those cases, one of our advantages is we've been to the rodeo before. But after that, we really do understand the company. We want to spend as much time with them as possible. We love coming to your office. In fact, we'd love to have somebody come work in your office for free for a couple of weeks so we could get to know you better. Anytime you let us, and that's the real challenge, is would you let us into your living room to entertain you the way, the old TV shows would talk about? If we can do that, we can be a very effective trusted advisor. We'll be working with the CFO, the general counsel, the president, the board, in the way they want us to work. And we understand it, and we start speaking in shorthand because we understand their products. Hopefully, we may, if we can, we go buy them if there's something we can use, and then help them reach their customers. We want to think about how to reach their customers as much as they do.
Hmm. One thing that I know is a tension in professional services that I'd love for you to speak to, Sandy, is that tension between billing and really having the client get that you're not just there kind of punching the clock or watching the ticker.
That is, the hourly billing cycle that came on in the 60s. Before that, you typically just billed what was fair and you had a relationship. But businesses got rational and said, okay, you work by the hour. What's your rate? I really don't care what my rate is. We want to provide value. We are happy to do fixed fee rates. A lot of our software clients, we call it SaaS rates, which means we just on a subscription basis say, let's arrive at a number every month. You'll pay it. You can have all of us all as much as you want, because we want to think about your business as much as you do. One of the hardest things about being a trusted advisor and a good lawyer is being left at the rail while they go on to do their thing. We want to be with them as far as we can to the execution, because that gets us satisfaction and personal meaning. And in the end, that's really why you'd want to be a lawyer in our kind of practice, is the personal meaning is achieving the goals with the client. If it's simply cranking documents or getting them to a place and then we wait behind, what you find for lawyers like that you get burnout. By the time you're in your mid-40s, you really don't want to do it anymore. So if you're with your client, though, and you're achieving their goals, and they like you and want you with them, and when you achieve a goal, you're celebrating together, that's what your personal goal is.
And can you give us an example of, like, a case where you got to do that? What does that actually look like?
Well, one case, I mean, it's typically, you know, our growth companies will be 10-year overnight successes. I mean, they get their seed round, they get follow-on rounds. In this case, the company got to be very big size, and we'd worked with them for 10 years. It was very gratifying when we finally sold them to a large public company. That, you know, not only did we do all the legal work, but they included us in, you know, in all their business thinking and in the business celebrating afterwards. And then it's especially gratifying when, you know, the acquiring company says, well, you know, you guys, you should stay on and do what you've been doing. We like what you're doing. And so, you know, not only is it just, you know, continued job, but again, it's a validation that you've done a good job and you understood the company and you got the company and its people and its products where they needed to be.
Do you have an example of a moment where you were in a conversation with a client where you could see the relationship transitioning from you just being their lawyer to them really seeing you as a resource, where you either had to take a risk or you had to challenge them in a particular way? Do you have anything that you can think
of?
Well,
I mean, they always, I mean, in fact, that's an interesting thing is we do keep our independence. I mean, if you wanted us to be your employee and do what you asked us to do, that would be great too, but we're independent. So often, I mean, frankly, this comes up every week. We're giving advice, well, you're not going to get there. That decision won't work. We're not going to do an offering in this quarter because the market's not receptive to what you've got. And it's much better if you can tell them that rather than being an agreeable guy, because then you have credibility. And credibility goes to the core of being a trusted advisor. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about your work in Silicon Valley and if that culture is different than here in Atlanta?
Sure. Yes. I mean, I spend about a week a month in Silicon Valley. I went to Stanford. I'm very involved out there. And I work with equity funds from there. The real difference is there is a much greater tolerance of failure, obviously, for the companies. And there's a much greater tolerance of though you're really seeing it come back east now, not having to say, I work for XYZ company. You are who you are, and the moment you're working for this company. One example, of course, is there is no concept of non-compete on the West Coast, so you can't be tied up to your company through a non-compete. So if something better comes along or... frankly, your company is flagging, you have the opportunity to move on to another company. Mm-hmm.
And they have so many companies, the density is there, so it allows a person to kind of jump ship and land somewhere.
One of the real strengths of the Bay Area is if you're a success, you typically stay in the Bay Area. It's a nice place to live. There are a lot of opportunities.
So you didn't get that memo?
No. You know, I grew up in Atlanta. I came back home. I really like it. The challenge here, of course, if you make multi-millions, you might go to Aspen or somewhere else. But a lot of people
not
do
to
stay.
Not Alpharetta?
No, maybe to Alpharetta. But a lot of people do stay here in Atlanta, or people like me who came home. You know, I'll use the cliche, it's a great place to raise kids. I have four kids. You know, we raise them here. It's a great town. And in fact, Atlanta has a lot of opportunity. We have done a great job of attracting young people, being one of the more vibrant cities of the country. You know, our competition these days, I guess, would be Dallas, Charlotte to a lesser extent, Denver, which is a surprise, but Denver is a real competitor.
Right.
And our strengths would be, you know, we've got Georgia Tech, Georgia State, Morehouse, Emory, already bringing in young people. And then our strengths are creating an environment where young people just want to move, live, and grow here, things like the Beltline. You know, if we can work on transportation and education a little bit more, I mean, we've got a great climate.
So you think the ecosystem is here for us to have a thriving kind of software as a service
it's
cluster.
Atlanta already is a great ecosystem for being a startup, especially in distribution, back office software for banking. We have everything. We just need a little more density. And the way we can get that is, again, creating what they have in other interesting cities where young people with ideas that want to work hard, want to move to and raise their family.
What about the access to capital?
Access to capital is a little more thin on the ground in Atlanta compared to the Bay Area, of course. I mean, you have Boston. The Bay Area are the two dominant players in capital. Ironically, it's not New York in terms of growth companies.
Right. Now, is that somewhere where your firm or people like you can really help in being a matchmaker in kind of helping these firms?
I mean, one of the reasons we opened our office in California was because we were doing so much work there. We needed to be near our clients, but we also wanted to bring that capital back and that knowledge of how to get that capital back to Atlanta and the Southeast.
Because isn't that one of the challenges? If the capital is not here in town, these people who have the capital and are investing in the firms here, these young people, they say, hey, you come to me so I can keep an eye on you.
Yeah, I mean, actually, San Diego complains about that a lot, is that the equity funds will invest in them, and then they say, why don't you just move up north?
Right. It's just a few hours away, right?
Right. In Atlanta, we do have some advantages. I mean, to give you the most extreme, Greenway Medical, which you may have heard of, is in Carrollton. They said, you know, if you get a programmer to live in Carrollton, they're not moving. I mean, they sink their roots. They're not going somewhere else, and they're not looking over the fence at something else. So we do turn out a lot of great students out of their schools here. We do bring through large industry into Atlanta a lot of great people. You know, back in the 80s, IBM was bringing a lot of great people into Atlanta that started up companies. Coca-Cola's always got spinoffs at startup companies. So those national companies bring in very smart people as well who start up companies. And again, you can live in Alpharetta or you can live in Midtown, and it's a very interesting and good life. So Atlanta is, you know, I wouldn't say we're there, but we are getting there.
Well, I think that you're seeing, I mean, for within the last 5 years, you're seeing a lot of people who've exited and decided to reinvest here in town,
right,
and build some of this ecosystem, right, that's allowing more and more younger firms to at least,
right,
start.
Right, it is, and the more the West Coast attitude of hey, let's just do this.
Right, let's go for it.
As opposed to, you know, where did you go to school or who are your parents? Let's just do this is
so
what
that must
makes
be exciting for you and your firm to be able to kind of have a front row seat.
Oh, it is.
That
it
world.
Is very exciting, and it's been gratifying to have, you know, the California office to be. You want to play in the majors.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's like playing for the Yankees there. So you can do that there. You can do it here as well.
Now, how are you seen in Silicon Valley, an Atlanta firm, you know?
Well, you know, it's kind of fun. To be from the South, they don't really understand the South. I mean, though I did go to Stanford, and I'm very involved there. They view us as nice people, you know, the typical stereotype of Southerners.
Right. Is that a barrier? Like a lot of...
You know, whatever is a barrier is your advantage, too. I mean,
so how do you make it your advantage?
Well, we are nice people, and we aren't taking them for granted. Our office has, you know, one of the largest technology purveyors in the world as our client, and it came about because we're no better lawyers in the pure technical sense. We'd like to think we are, but there are so many good technical lawyers. But, you know, we've met their needs, so we've grown into that client.
Mm-hmm. So you've earned their trust.
Yes, we've earned their trust. And that's my point. I guess the point of being a trusted advisor is you're no longer the provider. You're a trusted advisor, so you're providing legal services, business advice, business opportunity as a trusted advisor.
So do you think that that level of engagement is... Where is it reasonable for a client to expect that you're kind of watching their back and being a matchmaker and bringing deals and opportunities to them? Is that?
Oh yeah, you're and not only in the macro sense,
right,
but in, you know, the micro sense of, I mean, you're looking at a patent or you're looking at a product or you're just looking at what this individual's space is in the company they work for, and you say, well, have you ever thought about this? This could help you.
Right.
And you got to be free to do that without being embarrassed or feel like you're crossing the line. That, you know, say, and you know, frankly, I want the same kind of feedback. There's nothing better than when a client calls and said, you know, you should be doing XYZ or are not doing XYZ. I thank them profusely.
Because it has to be a two-way street, right? I guess for both of you, where you're comfortable in sharing an opportunity or something that may be danger.
Right.
And that they're comfortable saying the same thing to you.
Getting back to the hourly fees, if we can work it out that it's not on an hourly basis, everybody's more comfortable.
Right, because then your client, if it's hourly, they're like, well, is this, you know, worth $300?
Well, their boss says, don't call him so much.
Right, that's the worst thing for you, right? Right,
so we would rather work it out so that there's agreed upon fee that's reasonable for both of us.
Right, that you both can live with and you're satisfied with.
Right, right.
So one of the things I'm wondering, Sherwin, and we'll get your perspective on this as well, Sandy, is how would you describe your personal brand as a trusted advisor? What is it that you personally think that you're known for and want to be known for by your clients?
You know, it's interesting because I think it's difficult oftentimes to see what makes you unique and special. It takes other people telling you because it's your unique genius. We talk about your unique genius. It's something that you're naturally good at doing that just people say, oh, how did you do that? Or you're so good at it. And it just seems normal. So I have to tell you what other people tell me because what I thought I was good at, that wasn't necessarily it. but what has come across over the years, and I've been doing this for 17 years now, is that I am very direct, but in a compassionate way. And David Geller, who's our CEO, the thing that makes you unique in working with your clients and why people feel comfortable with you is that you possess a level of emotional intelligence that allows you to see what's happening with the person. And then I'm comfortable enough in our relationship to say what I'm seeing and to question them on it. I feel that it's important to be honest with ourselves. So if I see my client going down a path and making a decision where I think they may be telling themselves a story versus being honest, I will point that out to them and ask if they're willing to explore it. If they're willing to, for instance, we have a tool that we use that's called the alternate story. That's a part of our wealth transformation guided conversation series. And it allows them to take a specific set of facts and figure out, and then we assess, hey, here's the story that you're saying. This is what you're telling yourself, the outcome. But here are the facts. So let's take this same set of facts and see what other alternate stories may exist. What is the emotion that you have applied to that story? What are the benefits? What are the costs? And is there anything else? So for me personally, I am very comfortable helping them answer the questions and figure out what's going on with themselves on that level before transitioning into what does this mean to us financially if my family decides to send our child to this school? What does it mean if we make the charitable gift via setting up a donor advised fund by transitioning a couple of $100,000 over in year one? Let's first see what's going on and what's driving the decision. So I think that's my personal brand. And I think at GV, I mean, we're just known for, you know, getting to the root of the issue. Let's get there. We manage, you know, $1.3 billion because we're good at it. We retain our clients because they know we care and we're going to help them really think through what's going on before they move forward.
Thank you. What about you, Sandy? How would you characterize your personal brand and what sets you apart?
Well, it's interesting, you know, Womble sent us to some of us to what they call leadership Womble, where you had to study what your personal brand is. And it was, again, just as you were saying, it surprised you. You know, you always think it's high quality legal work, but there's a whole lot more than that. There's devotion to the client. There's being open. There's being respect, you know, for the individual and learning about the individual. So so I think those are more of the qualities that I realized that I had.
And is that how you think that your clients see you? Do your clients see you that way as well?
I hope so. I don't want them to see me as, hey, this guy knows where the money is, or, hey, this guy, you know, can crank a document. Again, I want them to understand that I hope they see me as somebody that brings, you know, 30 years of experience and is open to their experience to help them reach their goals.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've done was to actually survey our clients and see, ask them the question, what do you see as the value that your advisor brings to the table? How do you see GV, financial advisors, as a part of your team? What is the value? And that was telling, because I think as service providers, we often make the assumption about what our clients want and need from us. So isn't it just so simple just to ask them the question and have them tell you what it is, and then make sure you can continue to deliver on that? You know, I'll often, when I call my clients, and I try to call all of them once a month, and we communicate either via, you know, email or phone, and I'll say, is there something that I'm not doing that you need me to do? Is there something I'm doing you need me to stop doing? And it's surprising. They will sometimes tell you, you know, don't send me so much paper, you know. And then it's something as simple as saying, hey, well, let us get in touch with the custodian and maybe we can switch you over to, you know, e-delivery of your statements. Or it's, you know, it's always something that is just a little irritating that you can if you can fix for them just by asking the question. Yeah, I do the training for the advisors at our firm, and we train on our processes and systems once a week. And one of my main training points is, don't go in assuming you know what they want. Don't go in. You create an agenda. You prepare as much as possible, but you go in and you don't know what happened since the last time you spoke with them, and they may come in and have a completely different need. You need to be able to meet them where they are. And so, yeah, we just have to remember it's their agenda, not our own.
So now, it sounds like both of you have this service mentality, that servicing your clients, and that's your part of your personal brand. And Sandy, you were mentioning that Womble has this Womble University. Does GV have this kind of formal GV University, where you kind of have a corporate brand that you're trying to protect and try to have the stakeholders kind of live up to?
Absolutely. It is such an important part of who we are. Our CEO, David Geller, does quite a bit of writing, and he's published in, he does several blogs and published in some local publications, as well as the Huffington Post on a regular basis. He's a contributor talking about this brand of being a wealth advisor. We really think the system is broken in how advice is being given out there. But internally, that's important that we live out that brand. So once a week, our advisors are involved in training for an hour, and we are bringing up real life client situations, questions that have come up. How would you answer this in a way that's very integrated, integrating the how and the why, the what we call guided wealth conversations, the ideas and opportunities, bringing up things that they didn't know, and finding tax strategies that are out there. And then how does that incorporate into the investment management? So how do you have that conversation that delivers on our unique brand at the advisor level? But then we also have classes for our staff. So we have about 50 people in our firm, and we take our staff members our employees and new hires through the exact same level of training. And we work hard to create a culture at GV where we're living out those values. I was interviewing a young lady this week for a new position, and she's a really sharp woman and a go-getter. And I got the impression that she would be the type who would have a hard time taking vacation. And I said to her, I said, you know, recharging is important. Balance is important. If you do not use your vacation time, you will be forced to go on vacation. And I told her a story about a couple of years ago. I said, my boss came to me and said, you need a break. You either take time off or I'm going to fire you. And I said, you're not going to fire me. He says, absolutely. He likes to hand the card and say, here's my card. I have the power to fire you. So take the vacation and then, you know, and get done what I needed to get done to take care of myself. And then we'll hire you back afterwards, but you have to go. And so just as I would tell my client, you know, you mentioned that having a close family relationship was one of your top life priorities. And so you need to come up with a plan for how you want to make this happen. We need to tell each other that. As well as the culture. So we do formal training. We have workshops internally. We have a young lady who spearheads that for our staff members in the office. And we talk the language. I mean, I always make the joke, you know, when it comes to guided wealth and our unique proposition, that I don't only drink the Kool-Aid, I mix it up and I add a little sugar and pass it out. Mm-hmm. It is definitely something that if you want to differentiate yourself and you want to deliver on your brand, it cannot just be a gimmick. You have to deliver.
And that's great that you have a company that aligns philosophically with where you're at, so that makes your day-to-day life pretty good.
Makes it really, really hard to leave. Right? I tell you, I mean, if you want to have a fulfilling life, do what you love to do, right? And have it line up with your values.
Right.
And it will make for, you know, this whole concept of retirement, you know, it's like, just do what you love and you can do it forever.
Right. If you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Absolutely.
So now, Sandy, you talked a lot about Stanford. How has your relationship with Stanford impacted your career? You know, you went to school there. That's great. But it seems like it's kind of woven into your whole career.
I left Atlanta, went out there when I was 18.
How'd you pick Stanford?
I saw Stanford play in the Rose Bowl.
So that's so their football team was
their
driving.
Football. And then about 5 or 6 years later, I was applying to colleges. And you know, remember that school? That was and then I found out it was a very good school.
And your parents were okay? You moving across country?
Yes. I think they thought I'd never come back, and so did I.
Uh-huh. So you had a great time, a great experience?
Had a wonderful time, great experience. You know, it really just sort of gave me a great education and opened my eyes to the variety that's out there in the world.
Mm-hmm. And that was, I would imagine that it was the early stages of Silicon Valley, where they were?
That was the early stages of Silicon Valley. And
so the myth hadn't been that.
No, you didn't go to the Bay Area to get rich at that
right,
point.
Right, the gold rush wasn't
right,
on yet.
Right.
So that must have been even more exciting for you to actually see it kind of.
No, it's been a lot of fun. And then I've been involved. I wound up being a trustee of Stanford. And then I've chaired something called the Institute for Research in the Social Sciences, which is a big data think tank. And I'm on another economic think tank founded by George Shultz called CEPR. So I spend a lot of time at Stanford, and so obviously it gives you a lot of great ideas and gives you good perspective on the world, and then it's great to bring it back here.
And then are you involved in the Alumni Association here?
Mm-hmm.
So then so that tie is you're helping the people that are...
That's how I think we met, right. I live and work here. My kids grew up here. Mm-hmm. So
did they go to Stanford?
Yes.
So you got that pipeline going back and forth.
I have that, yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. A truly vested mm-hmm. interest. Mm-hmm.
I'm a big part of their operating budget as well.
Well, thank you all for being part of the show. Trust Advisors, we can't get enough of them, because I think that they are what holds all these companies together. I mean, you have to have this kind of fluid relationship between the businesses, the trusted advisors, and that's how more relationships get made, and that's how companies grow. And I think that they're an important part of the ecosystem in order to make this, especially Atlanta, thrive. You know, having the trusted advisor, having access to people and resources that, you know, that have a collaborative kind of mentality, the servant mentality, I think it opens doors for everybody.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Sweeney, for making this show possible.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Sherwin and Sandy, for joining
thank
us.
Thank you.
But before we go, I want to make sure, Sherwin, if somebody wants to learn more about GV, a website for you guys?
Yes. You can go to gvfinancial.com to learn more about us, and you can call us directly at 770-295-5600.
And Sandy Womble Carlisle.
I'm thinking Womble Carlisle. Just Google Womble Carlisle in any one of our 14 cities and you'll find us.
All right. And Soini, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you?
www.anonaenterprises.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn.
All right. Well, thank you all for being part of the show. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.